Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And welcome to episode 219 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Ross.
Hi, Dave. How's it going?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. I've been suffering from a cold a little bit the last couple of weeks, but it's given me plenty of time to watch TV and play video games. So it's been a blessing in disguise.
Always good. So what have you been doing then?
Cool. So last time we talked, I was playing Persona 5. Do you remember that?
Yes. So
this is like a game about being a high school student who's got like a alter ego, right? Then
yes.
The alter ego is changing people's lives and changing society and stuff. So I finished it. It was really good, really fantastic. So I picked up Persona 4, which is the game before this, on, do you remember the PS Vita, Dave?
Oh, yeah.
So this is, I actually looked, it's actually smaller than my phone, it's the screen. But this is like Sony's last sort of handheld console.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's really fun because, like I say, because it's smaller than my phone, it actually feels small, you know what I mean? Compared to like a Switch or something that feels kind of feel a little bit bulky.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really good. So I'm enjoying that right now.
Cool.
Also, a couple of TV programs on the go. We started watching Working Moms Season 3 just came to Netflix. So this is a Toronto-based sitcom about moms who work and you know, they balance having grown-up lives with being parents and to babies and young kids and stuff. It's a really good series, really funny. Yeah, really cleverly done as well. Quite dark, though, so, you know.
Okay, cool. I have not heard of that one. So
it's
yeah.
Really good. I would give it a go. I think like the funny stuff's in there, but the sort of heart of it is the drama that happens in these people's lives, and it's really. I think it's only like a 20-minute episode situation, so
okay.
They're pretty easy to get through as well.
Yeah.
So speaking of, we've also been rewatching a classic, Dave, Parks and Recreation on Amazon Prime.
I need to go and watch that because I know it's supposed to be brilliant, and I've never picked it up. So yes.
A few months ago, we finished The Office and we were sort of, the US Office, I should say, and we were kicking about sort of wondering what to watch next. And we've watched it once before, but I was a little bit younger, so I couldn't appreciate it. But yeah, once you see Chris, so this is sort of, I think, the role that put Chris Pratt sort of on the map.
Yeah.
In fact, we just got to the sixth season, there's seven seasons, and he leaves for a little while. And I'm pretty sure it's because they're recording Guardians of the Galaxy. And he comes back having, there's a joke in it about how he just stopped drinking beer and he lost loads of weight because of course he's huge.
Yeah.
Whereas in the first few seasons, you know, he's a bit rounder, shall we say.
Yes.
But yeah, really definitely worth a go, especially if you've never seen it, Dave. Absolutely. So like Aziz Ansari gets his break in it, and he's really, really funny, and like Amy Poehler.
Yeah.
Also Billy Eichner is in it. I think it's the first thing I saw Billy Eichner in. It might be the first thing he was in, but he's like big deal now. Yeah, really good. Really good series. Worth a go. Also, Dave, another blast from the past. We've been watching the Matrix movies. Do you remember the Matrix?
I do, and they're making another one, yes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So we were talking about how they're making another one, and we were talking about how neither my wife or I could remember the plot. Still no clue, but we've watched all three of them again now, and I think they stand up a lot more than people I assumed they did. I think something... Go on.
My recollection is first one, fabulous. Second one, pretty good. Third one, meh.
See, My now opinion, the other side of it, is that the second one dragged a bit, but the third one was okay.
Okay.
So I would do one, then three, then two. But, you know, this is an idiot's opinion, Dave. but yeah, I think that some of the action, especially in the second one, looks a bit ropey because they do less like get Keanu Reeves to punch this guy and a bit more sort of PlayStation 2 CGI.
Right.
And it looks, I think it looks ropier in the second one than in the third one, which I think took me out of it. And there's a bit more enter a room and a guy explains what's happening. You know, he explains the story in the second one.
Yeah.
Whereas the third one, the story like isn't as smart, but it at least they don't sit in a room with a man and have it dictated to you, you know?
Right, yeah.
Which I think is the beauty of the first one, is that you see it unfold. Nobody, like, apart from the bit where he even says he can't tell you what the Matrix is, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely recommend a go. I think the action holds up, like I say, and for the most part, generally. I think there are some things like people in the 90s, I guess it's, I think it's 98, the first one. Yeah. Mobile phones and sunglasses are very strange in those times.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, pretty much the only thing that dates it. But you can sort of buy it because, like, the whole thing's got this sort of green hue when they're in the Matrix. I think they're really good, and I still think they're worth another go over.
Yeah, yeah. I should go back.
How about you, Dave? What have you been up to?
So I went and finally finished Another Life, which is the Katie Sackhoff sci-fi series, which was on Netflix. And I'd watched the first couple of episodes and hadn't been back to it, sort of left it. Not because I didn't like it, just other stuff got in the way. So I finally got to the end of that series. Really enjoyed it. It does end on a bit of a cliffhanger, so I hope they're coming back for another season. But yeah, really enjoyable sci-fi. It's very tropey in the sci-fi thing. You know, you've got episodes where they really leaning into a lot of the things you've seen in other sci-fis, such as, you know, getting high on a sort of mysterious alien world. They end up on a sort of alien world and take something they shouldn't by accident. So you've got that sort of tropey thing. You've got a AI robot that goes a bit wrong. You've got, you know, so there's all that sort of stuff in there. So it's not necessarily massively original, but it's quite nicely put together and it's enjoyable. And I like the story of it, and the whole premise is basically alien artifact lands on Earth. They think they've pinpointed where the alien artifact has come from, so they try and go and make contact, but that's sort of quite a long journey. So she leaves her husband behind. Her husband is the person that is trying to decipher the alien artifact on Earth.
Wow.
So that's the sort of connection.
And the whole series is on Netflix, yeah? It's just one season for now.
Yeah, it's one season on Netflix at the moment. As I say, it doesn't... And it ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, you know, so it is designed to come back, but we'll have to see whether it does. Also on Netflix, Island, which we've talked about over the last few weeks because it was kind of launching and they put trailers out there.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Oh no.
It is, but it's almost terrible to the point of you kind of want to watch to see just how bad it is. I mean, I watched the first episode and I was thinking, the writing in this is not good. It's very
What's the elevator pitch here, Dave? What's the story?
Okay, so the story is a group of people wake up on an island, no idea how they got there, and they are trying to sort of find a way to survive.
Sure.
That is sort of the pitch. There is another element to that, which was completely ruined by the trailer.
Oh, no.
Because they show you what that other element... And we've talked about it because I assumed it would be more up front. But just in case I don't know whether I should really say, but, you know, we know actually why... Or have some idea why they're on the island, because it was shown in the trailer. So that whole mystery thing has completely gone out the window. And
that's a shame.
You've got... These guys, they're not particularly likable personalities. The personalities don't really work. They seem incredibly forced. You've got them, like, in the first episode where they've just woken up with no memory. There's a group of them. They're on this island. One of them starts sunbathing.
Oh, sounds good to me.
And she uncovers a book in the sand that basically says the mysteries or the mysterious island, and looks like a sort of guidebook to the mysterious island. And she just looks and goes, "Oh, what's this book?" and throws it away. And you're like, "Really? You're on a mysterious island and you found a book that's titled The Mysterious Island. You wouldn't even flick through it?" You know, particularly when you've got nothing else to read. It's so weird. It's so badly written.
If we do want to watch it, it's on Netflix, yeah?
Yeah. I got about 3/4 of the way through the next episode and I started looking it up online, thinking, is it me? Am I missing something? It's like, no, it is this
bad.
Everybody
else loves it.
But there are a lot of people out there. There was a lot of talk about it, just talking about the fact that it is sort of almost so bad it's good type of show. So worth going to look at if you like those sort of, but it just car crash. But yes, that's I-Land, that if you want to go and look for it. The Hot Zone I also watched, which is a new show which started on National Geographic, which is about the sort of outbreak of a deadly virus. That I thought was quite good. It's doesn't give a huge amount away in the first episode. You sort of see them potentially the start of the spread of this new virus. I won't go into any huge amount of detail on that, but it was that is one to look up if you haven't seen that yet. It's because it's sort of buried on National Geographic, so maybe one that you bypassed. But Hot Zone, that is worth looking up. Temple, which is the new Sky show I watched. It's Mark Strong in the lead role in that. He effectively runs this underground clinic, which is literally an underground clinic at the Temple tube station. It sort of opens, there's a bank robbery that goes wrong, and his friend, which is sort of helping him with the clinic, who has got various shady deals, played by Daniel Mays, he brings the mate of his that was involved in the bank robbery along, and that's sort of how you get introduced into this clinic. He's not really set it up for that particular purpose, but that's sort of what it ends up getting used for, and that's how you get introduced to it. But yeah, interesting looking series, an interesting premise for a show. I quite enjoyed that. And it's sort of drama or dark comedy kind of mix, I would say. So it is a drama, but there are comedic moments in it. It is really good, funny, interesting. I think that's Sky One are running that. I could all be on catch up, I think, because most of those Sky shows are at this point. But yes, Temple, worth going to watch. And the MCU, my run through the MCU, I'm up to Phase 3. I just started Doctor Strange. So I'm enjoying running through that. What I find interesting, actually, is how well those movies string together as not only as a cohesive whole, but like the Captain America movies, if you hadn't watched the other films, still string together quite well.
Yeah.
You know, the main plot point of which, I mean, for those sort of second and third Captain America movies, really is Bucky that sort of, you know, strings those two together. And yes, there are other characters in there that might not make any sense if you hadn't watched the other MCU films.
Yeah.
But it's still, as a cohesive story, still strings together if it's just those movies. You know?
Sure. I think you'd come up with an issue if you watched an earlier one and then a later one. And certain people, I think specifically because of that third Captain America movie, certain people end up in certain situations and you're like, oh, well, why is this person here? And, you know, that's the only thing. But like you say, the characters would still... it would make sense, you know, even the new characters.
And the end of Phase 2 is when that starts to dissolve a little bit, where they kind of start to assume that everybody is watching everything, you know. It does start to get into that point, but they do still string together quite well as sort of individual, you know, sets of films, as well as being part of a cohesive whole, which is quite nice. But the earlier movies, they were obviously a little bit hesitant about whether everybody would go and see every single film, you know.
For sure.
So, you know, all the Iron Man string together and without too much reference to other stuff. But I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying that run through. And I, like I said, I've just started Doctor Strange. So that one will be my next one.
What's interesting, have you seen the latest Spider-Man, Dave?
I haven't yet, no.
There's some interesting stuff because of the events of whatever the last Avengers one was called, Endgame, right? Because of that and where Spider-Man is in the universe now.
Or isn't, in this case.
Or isn't, yeah, right? there's some interesting stuff where actually, like you say about these movies tying together, they've sort of retroactively tied certain things about certain of those earlier movies into the, you know, they've become more relevant now, which I think is really clever. And it's a shame you haven't watched the Spider-Man. But people who have, I'm sure, will know what I mean. And there's a couple of different bits in that movie that tie to some much earlier movies in the canon that, that I think it's really cleverly done like that.
Yeah, I had heard that. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I just missed it completely at the cinema, so I'm waiting for the DVD release to come out for that. So that's all the stuff that we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. TV and film news this week, we start off with, well, it's all about the streaming services, really. That's been the big thing to launch with, because we usually start with renewals, cancellations and pickups. And I technically, these are pickups, I guess.
So
Apple TV have announced their launch date. They are launching worldwide, pretty much, or in over 100 countries anyway, including the UK. Apple TV will launch on Friday, the 1st of November. If you're wondering how to get Apple TV, there is an app coming to certain smart TVs. You can buy an Apple TV box. It's also, the app is coming on, I think, onto the Amazon stick. So, and the Amazon stuff. So you can get it on there. I don't know whether it's, I don't think it's coming on as an Amazon channel, but it's coming onto the Amazon stick device.
And presumably they'll have some sort of web service as well, right?
Yeah, there is a, I think it's a Apple.tv or something. You can, so you can actually go and watch just directly online for the from the TV portal. You've also got, I think it's coming to the Roku boxes as well. So there is a whole bunch of different ways you can get it without having to go out and spend like 100 quid on a Apple TV box. You know, there are various different ways of getting it. It is out there. It is going to be relatively easy to get hold of. I think it's $5.99 a month. So it's not a huge amount. I mean, that's the same as an add-on channel to the Amazon system. So, you know, it's not unreasonable. They've also announced their starting lineup. Then there isn't a huge amount of shows on the starting lineup, but there are some quite interesting good ones on there. So the morning show, which we've talked about before, this is the dramedy that's set behind the scenes of a US TV morning show. Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, and Steve Carell are
big names.
Stars of that. Yeah, it's very big names there. I think Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston are the producers as well. So, so yeah, that looks like it could be really quite good. For All Mankind, which is from Ronald D. Moore, that's an alt history drama where it's set around the space race. And I think the premise is that the USSR beats the US to the moon. And it's sort of how the 60s move forward from that basic shift in the dynamic. And it's sort of how the space race doesn't really end because the US are then sort of catching up. So it sort of forces them to look at other things such as trying to get to Mars and that sort of thing. So that looks quite interesting. I'm quite looking forward to that. The Sea, which is from Stephen Knight, the creator of Peaky Blinders, stars Jason Momoa and set in a future where the human race has lost the ability to see, so lost the sense of sight. And then two children are born who have the ability to see. That's the sort of premise of it. And it's kind of set in this kind of, you know, society has kind of collapsed and gone backwards. So, you know, it's this sort of barbarian-esque type society that they're living in.
That's really interesting, because if no one can see, not only does it change, it changes what we value, right?
Exactly.
And sort of how we interact with the world around us, you know. Interesting. That's really interesting.
So there is a trailer for that, which is up on the website. There's a trailer for The Morning Show and For All Mankind up there as well.
Great.
There's Dickinson, which is a dark comedy coming of age story, which explores the constraints of society, gender and family through the lens of a rebellious young poet called Emily Dickinson. So there's that. There's new stuff from Oprah Winfrey, which is kind of a book club type of thing, and there's interviews and things she's doing. There's a documentary called The Elephant Queen going on there, which is about the sort of potential extinction of the species. There's a reinvention of the kids show Ghostwriter, which I don't really know. I think it was a US show. There's Snoopy in Space, which is Snoopy in space.
Snoopy, I know.
Yeah, basically Snoopy in space. And Helpsters, which is from the makers of Sesame Street, and that's for young children, obviously, and teaching them how to do various things. And, you know, it's one of those kind of standard Sesame Street kind of learning things, which sounds really quite good. So there's that. So yeah, interesting selection of things. They are new things that they are going to be adding on a monthly basis as well. So there is more stuff coming than that, but that's their starting lineup. I don't think that's too bad for a sort of $5.99
Not bad at all.
Sort of deal. I will be getting Apple Plus, I think. Definitely one to look out for. There's also been announcements of another streaming service coming. This one coming from NBC Universal. This will not launch in the UK. I very, very much doubt you're going to get this in the UK. It's called Peacock, which is based after the NBC logo. So it comes from NBC Universal. And whilst we might not get the service itself, there are a bunch of quite interesting sounding shows coming into it. One of them is...
Which we won't get, just to be clear.
we might do, because these sort of things tend to get picked up by other networks in the UK. Right. So, you know, that's what I'm expecting. Off the list of things, the most interesting one that stood out is there is another reboot of Battlestar Galactica coming, this time coming from Sam Ishmael, who is the creator of Mr. Robot. I think that sounds like it could be intriguing. It's unclear whether it would have any connection to the previous version, which was done by Ronald D. Moore. We don't know anything really more about it than that, other than they are making it. So, I mean, obviously the Ronald D. Moore version wasn't the original version either. So, you know, it's strange given how much acclaim that series got, that reboot series got, how much they're kind of looking to reboot it again. So... intriguing, but there's that coming. Brave New World, which we've talked about previously, which is Alden Ehrenreich and Demi Moore starring in that. We've talked about that before. It was coming to the USA Network, but it looks like they're now moving it across to their streaming service. There is a reboot of Saved by the Bell coming.
Terrific. I'll take that.
With Mario Lopez and Elizabeth Berkley back playing their characters. I don't know whether anybody else will be joining them, but there is that coming. So presumably those characters are going to be the teachers, possibly, and then there'll be new kids.
Reboot. So you know they're doing Lizzie McGuire, but now Lizzie McGuire is older, so it's like a sequel almost.
Right, yeah, but, well, they're doing...
But this is like a reboot.
Yeah, well, I mean, it will be them playing the same characters, but obviously they can't be in high school because they're much older.
Right.
So it's the same characters again. So I don't know what the setup will be, but my guess is they will probably end up being teachers, I would have thought. Punky Brewster, which is another big American show.
Oh, yeah.
That's coming back. Same actress of that. The same sort of thing as you were talking about just then, that with a grown-up version of that character. There is a new series of AP Bio coming, which AP Bio has actually been picked up by Sky Comedy in the UK, which is their new channel that they're launching in February next year, I think it is, that they're launching that. But there is a third season of that coming. That's was on NBC, and it's now going to be on the streaming service. There is a movie, second spin-off movie of the long-running series Psych. They're making that as well. There is a new show called Rutherford Falls coming from Mike Sure, who is the man behind Parks and Rec and The Good Place and various other things. There is a few unscripted shows as well, such as like a spin-off of Real Housewives. And there is a behind-the-scenes documentary series from Saturday Night Live and a whole bunch of other stuff. So I think that Sky Comedy Channel may pick up a few of the comedies, because Saturday Night Live and AP Bio are coming onto that Sky Comedy Channel. So there may be some kind of crossover coming there, so we may see more of them come across. But yeah, so there are an interesting new show, bunch of shows coming to that streaming service. The streaming service itself, like I say, I don't think will launch outside of the US, but the shows probably will come across. So that's sort of why I wanted to mention that. Moving on, a few air dates that we've got. Britannia Season 2 premieres on 7th of November, so that is coming back. And His Dark Materials, which has been talked about forever, that is coming on the 3rd of November to BBC, followed by the 4th of November on HBO if you're in the US. And there is one cancellation as well, No Good Nick, which was the Netflix series, has been cancelled after, well, they say it's one season, but it was in two parts and it was 20 episodes and they split it in half, so it feels like two seasons.
Feels like
so that has been cancelled as well. Moving on to some other news, there is another Game of Thrones prequel in the works.
Of course there is, Dave. I haven't got enough of those yet.
I mean, we knew that they were developing five. There were five scripts being in development. A few months ago, we were told that three of them were still very much in active development. Two are now potentially, well, one's definitely being piloted. It looks like this second one is also going for pilot as well. So this one is based around the Targaryens, and it's set 300 years before the events of the main series, explores the beginning of the end for House Targaryen. So 300 years before the series started, that's around the time of the War of Conquest, when Aegon Targaryen first invaded Westeros on the back of his dragon. It's when they set up King's Landing as the capital. They forged the Iron Throne, sort of set up the backdrop of Game of Thrones as we know it up until, you know, Robert's Rebellion comes along like 300 years later and, you know, kills off the Mad King. So it is basically that sort of setup. So it's an interesting kind of history, I think.
Yeah,
of the
good
point.
Time, I think, to pick.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's interesting. The other one that has already had its pilot shot and they're in post-production at the moment, that one, which comes from Jane Goldman, that one is set thousands of years beforehand, so has very little direct correlation with the main series. This new spin-off comes from Ryan Condal, who was the creator of Colony, that sci-fi series, or co-creator of Colony, that sci-fi series. Interesting, I think, that one could be.
Well, yeah, definitely.
We don't know whether they're going to potentially greenlit two shows or whether it's an either-or situation. I mean, they could potentially greenlit two and then run them every other year and jump them, you know.
Oh, yeah, right.
Do them that way. So that takes the pressure off them having to kind of run through, you know, and it gives them time to you know, mess around with them and stuff. Because that's been a bit of a problem for HBO recently, is the fact that they just can't churn out the stuff quick enough because there's so much post-production on it. So so we'll have to see what happens with that. But they are aware that they don't want to kill the golden goose, and they don't want to kind of let the quality level drop.
Yeah.
You know, so they're only going to greenlight them if they feel that they're working. So we'll see what they do. But yes, there is one other show that was in active development last we heard. We don't know what will happen with that, but that's what we've got at the moment. On to some casting news. There was a whole bunch of casting news again this week. James Gunn revealed the full cast for Suicide Squad, although he did have the caveat, don't get too attached.
Yeah. So is it a sequel or a reboot, or like what's happening?
It's a sequel-y boot.
Right. So what's her name's back, isn't she? Margot Robbie's back.
Yeah. So No Will Smith. Jai Courtney is back as Captain Boomerang. Joel Kinnaman is back as Rick Flagg. Viola Davis is back as Amanda Waller, and Margaret Robbie is back as Harley Quinn. So those are the people from the first one that are returning. Yes. So there is obviously some connection to that first movie. However, it's a different director. It is James Gunn taking control
from
of
Guardians,
it
right?
From Guardians. And after what he did with Guardians and, you know, the various other hands that he's had over that franchise, I'm very, very much looking forward to what they do with this. And he's also been raiding Marvel's toy box, because Sean Gunn, his brother, is coming across as well. You know, that's fine. Michael Rooker is also coming across. Idris Elba, Taika Waititi is also in there as well. There's a whole bunch of people that have, you know, again, it's quite possible that they'll just kill these characters off really quickly, you know,
and
maybe why there's an agreement in place, because I would have thought that their contracts wouldn't allow them to come across, but they may be out of contract with Marvel at this point. So, you know.
That's interesting, because especially like Taika Waititi's got directing new Thor, right? And also... Yeah. He's in your Star Wars show, The Mandalorian. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you'd imagine he'd be quite into Disney, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's quite possible that they're getting either they're playing CGI characters or they're getting killed off quite quickly. We've also got Peter Capaldi in there for Doctor Who fans.
Yeah.
So that, I thought that was an interesting name. No idea who he's playing. And Captain Tightpants himself from Firefly, Nathan Fillion, is in there. I will watch Nathan Fillion in absolutely anything. I think he's brilliant. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing that and seeing whether he actually survives or not and who he's playing. Out of the other cast, John Cena is in there, rumoured to play a character called Peacemaker. David Dastmalchian who was actually in Iron Man and Wasp and has popped up in The Flash, believed to be playing Polka Dot Man. He's in there. Joaquin Castillo, who was in Narcos Mexico and Eastbound and Down, is in there. Pete Davidson from SNL is in there. Actress and martial artist Mei Ling Ng. German actor Fluea Borg, who was in Counterpart. Argentinian-Spanish actor Juan Diego Botto. Storm Reid, who was in Euphoria, Alice Braga, who was in Queen of the South, Steve Adji, who is believed to be playing King Shark, who we've seen on the TV show, seen in The Flash, so we'll see whether that makes it on there. There's a few other people in there as well, but I don't really know the names.
There's that big it's a big picture, isn't there, with all the names on, and there must be like 16 so names, and they're it's a big deal.
I suspect half of them at least are going to get like just killed off, because with James Gunn, he's going to take the Suicide Squad thing quite literally, I rather suspect.
So, and there used to be this thing, right, where like if you've got a Samuel Jackson or someone in a movie, he's going to be fine, right? He's going to probably live to the end. But I think since like your Game of Thrones is and stuff, you don't really know anymore, and it's hard to like any of these people could survive or not survive. I think Margot Robbie might be a lock, but other than that, I'm not really sure who's going to survive.
Yeah, Margot Robbie has to be a lock because she's got another movie coming out.
Right.
So that's got to be in there. I suspect Rick Flagg is probably okay. Jai Courtney could go either way. Amanda Waller is probably fine because she's the leader and, you know, she's not out in the field particularly. Yeah. In terms of the other names, though, it really wouldn't surprise me. I think it would just be very funny if they killed off Sean Gunn very quickly.
Taika Waititi does cameos in his own movies, so like he's probably going to be in and out, I would think.
I would think so. I think a lot of those, they're just going to end up randomly killing people off fairly quickly. So it sounds like great fun. I'm already very excited for that cast.
From a movie that if you'd have told me after I watched Suicide Squad that they're doing another one, and I don't think I'd have been interested at all, but now I'm like, I'll watch this, sure, why not?
I think it's the fact that it's James Gunn, and it's exactly the sort of movie that James Gunn should be making, you know. I think he'll do a brilliant job. Moving on to other casting, Richard Dormer, who you all know from Game of Thrones and Fortitude, has been cast as the lead in the BBC America Discworld World series The Watch.
It's exciting news, Dave.
Yeah, it's set in Ankh-Morpork, where crime has been legalized. The series follows a group of misfit cops as they rise from decades of helplessness to save their corrupt city from catastrophe. He has been cast as the leader of The Watch, so he's playing Sam Vimes, who is the captain of The Watch, disempowered by a broken society that reduced his department jurisdiction to almost nothing. So they've announced a group of disenfranchised comrades to go with him as well. Joe Eaton Kent, who is starring as Constable Cheery. You've got Adam Hugill, who's starring as Constable Carrot. Idealistic new recruit raised by dwarf, but really is a human abandoned at birth.
Have you read these books, Dave?
I haven't read the books, no.
So they're terrific. Carrot is a really important character towards the end of... So there's four or five, I think, that have The Watch in them, but Carrot is really important all the way through, and really interesting to see how they stitch it together. This is really exciting. Just so you know, this is great.
Mama Colette, who was in True Blood, plays the mysterious Corporal Angua, who is tasked with Carrot's training and keeping the rookie alive, which I think is a slight change from the book from what I was read. But
yeah, I believe so.
Lara Rossi also cast as Lady Sybil Ramkin, the last scion of Ankh-Morpork's nobility. Sam Adjuwumi, who is the wounded and wronged Carsa Dunn, out to hijack destiny itself, take control of the city, and exact the terrible revenge on a just reality.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think Carsa's from like the third or fourth book, and this book goes into like time travel and stuff, and it starts to become like a time travel action, but generally they're like procedural comedy, I would say. But this one was like a big left turn, so yeah, really interested to see where they go with that, because there's a lot of stuff in there, there's a lot of material there.
Yeah, yeah. I am very excited to see this. It is coming to BBC America in the US. Despite it being BBC America, that is actually part run by AMC, I believe. So there's no guarantee that it'll end up on BBC in the UK. We don't know where it'll end up over here. There's no announcement of a UK broadcaster yet. So we'll have to see. But I strongly suspect this will get picked up by somebody.
So, I hope so.
I mean, Amazon would seem like the obvious place, given that they've just run that Good Omens. So would seem like the obvious people to try and go and pick it up. And just because we have an AMC channel as well doesn't necessarily mean that we'll come to them, because they tend to sell things off to the highest bidder anyway. So we'll see what happens with that. And over on Netflix, they've announced some casting for the Umbrella Academy season 2. Yusuf Gatewood, who was in Good Omens, actually, and played one of the four horsemen. I can't remember which one. And he was
the
also
second one.
Yeah, he's also in the originals as well, which is where most people will know him from. Rin Island, who was in Sneaky Pete, she was Julia in that. And Rita Arya, who was in Humans and Doctors as well. They've all joined the season 2 of the Umbrella Academy. Yusuf is playing Raymond, a born leader with the smarts, gravitas and confidence to never have to prove it to anybody. He's warm, dedicated and has the innate ability to disarm you with a look. Devoted husband is the kind of guy everybody wants to know. Marine Island is playing Sissy, a fearless, no-nonsense Texas mum who's married young for all the wrong reasons. Still in her prime, she's eager to rediscover what life and love has to offer. And Ritu is playing Lila, a chameleon who can be as brilliant or as clinically insane as the situation requires. Unpredictable, mischievous and sarcastic, Lila's gifted with a twisted sense of humour. So those are three new characters coming to season 2 of the Umbrella Academy. No idea how they fit in, but I'm very much looking forward to that.
Because wasn't the plot of the Umbrella Academy that there were only, was it 5 or 6 of them that were born with superpowers?
Well, no, actually there were more than that.
But yes, that's right. Yeah.
But
they don't know where the others went, did they?
Takes that small group of them. He adopts like 6 of them or 7 of them. I can't remember.
You're quite right, yeah.
So, yeah, but there were others as well. So I don't know, because I've only read the first of the Umbrella Academy books, which is basically the first series. So I'm not sure about these characters from the following books. I'm assuming they are from the following books. So we'll have to see. But I really like all those guys. I don't know Ritu particularly, but Yusuf is great. Marine was brilliant in Sneaky Pete. So I'm rather looking forward to seeing those guys pop up.
Definitely.
And out of casting news, there is another revival show coming, this one with a far more British bent to it. This one is the return of the video gaming show Games Master, is apparently in development. Games Master, are you aware of this?
Thank you for asking, Dave. No idea.
Yes, I thought you probably wouldn't be. So it is a 90s show. It ran from 92 to 98, the original Games Master. It was essentially back in the days before gaming was everywhere. This was pretty much the only place on mainstream TV that showcased gaming. Presented by a man called Dominic Diamond, along with the help from the disembodied head of Sir Patrick Moore, who played the Games Master. The series featured gaming previews, reviews, challenges, and contestants who could win the coveted Games Master Golden Joystick Trophy. So that was the sort of setup for it. Gaming even now isn't really on mainstream TV. So I think this would be quite an interesting thing for them to pick up, because they are planning to aim it at a mainstream audience, and not only at a child audience. They're talking at sort of ranging from like 16 to like 45. You know, they're going for a full blown, you know, people that remember the original show, new audiences, as just a mainstream gaming show. No announcement of where it will get picked up, if it will get picked up. It's a co-production between Alaska TV, who are not based in Alaska. They're based in London and Brighton. I'm not sure why they're called Alaska, but that's you get anyway. And Games Master rights holders, Future Publishing, are the people that make PC Gamer and all that sort of thing. They own the Games Master brand. So it's a co-production between those guys. But yeah, I'm rather excited for this. I rather like the idea of them actually having a mainstream gaming show that sort of looks at games and reviews games, because there really isn't anything like that, weirdly, out there on TV at the moment, I don't think. Not that I can think of.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I wonder how, like, the landscape of video games is much different now than the 90s with, you know, regard to esports and things like that and competitive gaming and loot boxes and the whole thing. I wonder how they navigate those topics. Yeah, should be good. I mean, Why not?
You know, I can almost envisage something with the sort of style of Top Gear, but as a gaming show, you know, something like that where it takes some well-known faces that love gaming, because there are people that are actually, you know, into gaming at this point. You know, maybe have a group of presenters that are reviewing and looking at games, and, you know, in the same way that something like Top Gear looks at cars, something like that sort of setup where it's that kind of thing, and have some sort of contest in there as well. You know, I mean, the closest we've come to was the Dara O'Brien Go 8-Bit.
I was about to say, Dara O'Brien's got to be all over this, surely.
Yeah, and I mean, this screams Dara O'Brien hosting it, absolutely. Maybe he's the games master, because unfortunately Sir Patrick Moore is no longer with us. So, you know, maybe you could have Dara as the games master floating head. That would be quite fun. But we'll have to see. As I say, very early in development at the moment, I might not come to anything, but I was quite excited about the idea of that. So it looks quite good. So that's all the news we have for this week. Let's move on to the interview.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
The interview this week is with Carl Thiel, who is a composer, and he's working on a new Netflix animated show called Seos Mantos. It's produced by Powerhouse Animation, who are the creators of Castlevania and Viz Media. It's a 70s era martial arts series and the first original anime series set in Mexico.
Whoa.
So it's an odd, interesting mix of kind of Chinese martial art, Mexican, 70s, all mixed together, which, I mean, as a composing challenge is quite intriguing. So
yeah, very interesting.
Got to talk to him about that. The series stars Danny Trejo, Mike Colter from Luke Cage, Vic Chow, Angelica Vale, and Johnny Cruz. Carl himself is an award-winning composer and producer. He was raised in Mexico City, and amongst his other projects, he collaborates an awful lot with Robert Rodriguez, did things like Spy Kids and Machete Kills and Sin City, Sin City 2 Deign to Kill For. He did the Dust Till Dawn series and multiple other shows and films as well. Seos Mantos comes out on the 3rd of October, by the way, on Netflix, if you want to keep an eye out for it. Here's the interview with Carl. He was a lovely guy to talk to. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Thank you for spending a little bit of time to come on and chat to me today.
Likewise. Thank you for taking the time to do it.
Whereabouts are you? You're based in LA?
Both LA and Austin. I'm in Austin at the moment.
Ah,
Austin,
right.
Texas.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Austin's got a bit of a film industry going these days, hasn't it?
It does. There's a lot of films being shot here now. And of course, we have Robert Rodriguez and Richard Linklater and Terry doing all these wonderful films based right out of Austin.
Yeah, yeah. And you work with Robert quite a lot, don't you? So
I do, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yes, good place to be based.
Exactly.
The show really you're on to talk about is, I'm going to probably mess this up, but Seos Mantos, or Mantos, is that right?
That's pretty close. Seos Mantos.
Seos
Mantos. Which translates to six hands in English.
Ah, right. Okay. Yes, my Spanish is terrible.
That's all right. That's what we're here to help.
Before we get into talking a bit about the show, should we just do a little bit of background? How did you become a composer in the first place?
Well, it's kind of a long story. You know, music has always been a part of my life. I started playing piano when I was six. My dad was a concert pianist, so there was always music at home. So I started taking, you know, official classics at 6 years old.
Right.
But I never really thought music was going to be my life. I thought it was going to be my hobby. You know, what I really wanted to do was direct. So growing up, I continually played music my whole life. But I went to college to study radio, TV, and film. While I was doing that, I was playing with bands. dance, you know, and I was taking music courses for fun, you know, and I started doing some PA work and set work with productions doing television commercials and films that would come by Austin. I studied at University of Texas.
Yeah.
While doing all that, I got to meet all the people that were, you know, hiring the composers and deciding what music was going to go in which commercials. And it kind of dawned on me. It's like, you know, I could do that. And so I put together a little demo reel of some fake commercials that I put some music to and passed that around to the different people that I had met. And eventually I got a break and I got to do this really low budget, really cheesy commercial that, you know, played, you know, overnight for these 900 calls. But, you know, basically it was the first time that somebody paid me to write music, and I got to see it on TV and it was just so exciting. I was like, man, I got hooked. It was, I had to continue doing that. And so I did more commercials for that company for a while, which opened the door to other more regional, more eventually national commercials. You know, I did a lot of stuff for Subaru and Walmart and Bud Light and the like,
yeah.
Which was really good training to be able to be creative quickly, to come up with ideas. You know, those projects usually have very quick turnarounds.
Yeah.
And also helped me be very versatile in terms of styles, because, you know, one day they'll ask me to do a Tejano ranchera thing for a beer commercial, and the next day they'll ask me to do an orchestral thing for a car commercial.
Yeah.
So I learned to be versatile and effective with quick turnarounds. That really opened up the door to more longer format projects. You know, I started doing some short documentaries, some corporate videos, which led to bigger projects and eventually feature films.
Yeah, and you've worked on some fairly big feature films as well. But the thing that you're really on to talk about is the TV show Sesmanos.
That one sounded great. Sounded really yeah. good there.
Sesmanos is this show, which is an animated series. It's coming to Netflix. Is this the first time you've done an animated project?
I've done some other animated projects in the past, particularly actually with Powerhouse Animation. We did these children's book author that had created these amazing books to help children cope with difficult subjects such as, you know, cancer and divorce and death and things like that, you know, in a very loving but truthful way. And so this man, Trevor Romaine, who's an incredible human being, wanted to make those books into short videos. And so I had met Trevor a long time ago. And when he did them, you know, we created the animated versions to his books, I ended up scoring those. So that was my first introduction to Powerhouse Animation. And this was over a decade ago. This is mid 2000s.
So you have a sort of history with Powerhouse.
Exactly.
And a project like this is, mm-hmm. given your background of your work with Robert Rodriguez and doing things like Machete Kills and Grindhouse and Sin City all that sort of stuff, I can see why they maybe go for you for something like this. Because it is kind of a 70s based martial arts thing. Couldn't be further away from a child's animation, really, than if it tried, having seen clips.
Absolutely. Yes, it's the polar opposite of it. Other than the fact that they're using colors and they're drawing, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, very much so. So you come about this project. It's quite interesting because it is set in Mexico, but it's got these Chinese elements to it as well.
Right.
Where do you start approaching a project like that?
You know, that's a good question. When Brad approached me about doing this, this was actually a few years ago. You know, he had this concept of a show that followed these three orphan Mexican children that were adopted by this Chinese kung fu master. And just right there, it hooked me, you know. Yeah. And then he was all about, by the way, there's also, you know, blaxploitation elements, and there's going to be some magic stuff, and there's also a drug lord, and, you know, all these different things. Oh, it happens in the 70s. So it's just, to me, musically, it was just like a huge playground. The first thing that I wrote for the new version, because we did a preliminary demo a few years back when he first had the idea.
Right.
When we came back, when we actually got greenlit and we ended up actually starting the actual show, the first thing that I wrote was the main theme. And I wanted to incorporate all those elements in the theme. So how do you combine Chinese music with Mexican music? Well, I started with basically a riff that has a Chinese vibe to it. It has, you know, follows the musical structure of Chinese melodic music. And so how do you make it Mexican? Well, let's see. Let's add some, let's make it, maybe have some mariachi trumpets playing it. you know, add some acoustic guitars, you know. So combining those different elements, testing different ways of maybe playing the flute, playing some Mexican elements, and, you know, the Chinese flute playing some Mexican elements. it ended up being this really cool amalgam that actually I was really surprised how well it worked.
Yeah.
Some of the lines, some of the melodic lines are actually like mariachi traditional lines, but I'm using Chinese harmonies with them. It was just a blast to play with those different elements and come up with something that's a really interesting hybrid.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So you're almost taking kind of elements from both sides and like switching like one to the other. And
exactly, so, yeah. Exactly. And on top of that, I added a wah-wah guitar, you know, to kind
of 70s. You know, yeah.
Exactly. Cause 70s. And it was just so much fun, and the rhythm of it, and, you know, make it orchestral. So it just, the whole thing came together in a beautiful, unexpected way.
Yeah, that's really amazing. Are you doing a lot of this digitally? Are you using real instruments, or are you kind of getting people to play, or what's the sort of mix like?
You know, it's funny because when they gave me the opportunity to do this project, they basically told me, have at it, do whatever you want with it. You know, we'll support you. And that was a huge gift for me because I really wanted this to be a very organic score, you know, especially they're playing homage to a lot of different styles and genres from the 70s. And, you know, making it a digital score would have been a disservice to that vision. And so I ended up actually using a 26-piece string orchestra that we recorded in Budapest.
Nice.
For the bigger cues. And for the rest of it, we have a lot of amazing soloists. We recorded a lot of real flutes, traditional Chinese flutes, the Xiao, the Dita. We have some Eru playing in there. I don't know if you're familiar with Tina Guo. She's a fantastic cello and Eru player. She played on a few cues and it just sounds incredible. We also have real Mexican traditional instruments, the guitarrón, the violin, the vihuela. We have real French horns, trumpets. I try to make this as organic as possible. So yes, to answer your question, it's definitely real instrumentation.
That's good. Well, I know there's one real instrument, although I don't know whether he's ever actually made it to the score, because you bought yourself a new toy, because you bought a Gugon harp.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I used it all over the score. And that actually was the first inspiration of a lot of the melodic stuff for the Chinese elements. Because that particular harp is tuned in the pentatonic scale, which is very traditional in Chinese music. So a lot of the original melodic themes were written on that harp.
Right. Okay, cool. I'm glad you got to use it, because you have a YouTube channel and there's a video of it up there, and it's you sort of unboxing it.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm glad you saw that.
which is great, because you're so excited about it, but you had no idea whether you were going to use it or not. So I'm glad.
I absolutely used it. I'm so glad you saw that, because yeah, that was very exciting when it came in.
So you managed to pick it up then, because it's not something you played before, I don't think.
No, I never played it before. But, you know, it's funny, having played guitar and piano and other instruments, you kind of have a little bit of a predisposition to learn other things quickly. And, you know, I obviously don't have the skill to play it as those who have practiced for many years, but I can certainly get away with, writing on it and adding color to the cues that I've written.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, you know, you're editing it, so if you go wrong, you can always take the bits out.
Exactly right. That's the miracle of doing it, you know, having a digital editing, because, you know, I can kind of half write, half play it, and then make it sound fantastic once I put it in the computer.
Absolutely. That's what you want. That's one of the maybe slightly more unusual instruments you've got. Have you got any other strange instruments that you use? Because I know composers have this habit of collecting kind of weird and wonderful things.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. You know, every time that I start a new project, I try to find a new instrument that's inspiring for that particular project. And as you well noted, the guzheng was the inspiration for this one. I also, halfway through the series, I ended up getting a pipa, which is an upright lute. It's a very ancient Chinese instrument. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But the reason why I got it is because there's a particular scene on the show where you actually see one of the characters playing a pipa. And it's like, there's no way I'm going to use a sample for that. So I have to get a pipa. And it's a wonderfully sounding instrument. And the minute you pluck it, oh, that's Chinese. You know it. No doubt of the origin of that sound. So I ended up using it on a couple of the latter episodes.
It is amazing how so many of the Chinese instruments really immediately sound like they're Chinese instruments compared to sort of everywhere else in the world. You know, with Mexico and stuff, you know, you think of trumpets, but then trumpets have lots of different uses and that sort of stuff.
Exactly. They depend more on the melodic and harmonic context to hone in on their origin. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, whereas with China, there are instruments instruments, which immediately you hear them, they're like, well, that's a Chinese instrument. So,
right. Yeah, very true.
You've been working on this project most recently, as some of your other work as well. The interesting kind of mix of things, because as we mentioned, Dust Till Dawn, the series, you did that. Sin City, you did that, the A Dame to Kill For. You did Segment of Grindhouse and Machete Kills.
Right.
Weirdly, it's sort of the other end of the scale. Last Man Standing, you did as a TV show, which doesn't seem to fit. One of these is not like the other, but it's great.
Right. You know, Last Man Standing was so much fun to work on. I worked on the first season for that. Yeah. A good friend of mine, Monty Montgomery, who's an incredible guitar player. He's just a virtuoso, really. He's friends with Tim Allen. And when Tim Allen was putting together the show, he approached Monty to ask him if he wanted to do some music for it. And Monty at that time hadn't had any experience doing music for television or for picture. And so he and I have a long history. I produced a couple of his records and we've been good friends for a long time. And so he asked me if I could help him put together the score for the first season. And so we worked together on that and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. But like you noted, it's very different than most of the stuff that I do, but it was really a great experience regardless. Yeah.
Yeah. And more recently you've done the Diving Deep documentary again, which is another sort of sidestep in a sort of out of the kind of action TV film genre as well, which is nice.
Right. And I don't know if you had the opportunity to see that documentary, but it's a beautiful, beautiful documentary that follows the life of Mike DeGree, who's an incredible underwater cinematographer. He passed on a few years ago due to all of the things he could have died. He actually died of a helicopter crash. But he was just an incredible underwater cinematographer. He did a lot of work for James Cameron and for the BBC and for, you know, National Geographic, all the incredible footage that you saw in the late 80s, early 90s and 2000s. Chances are he shot it.
Right.
One of the biggest breakthroughs that he had is when the big, I think it was for the National Geographic where we, for the first time, we saw the orcas hunting the baby seals on the shore.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's his footage.
Right.
And he highlights in the documentary how he shot that. And it's just breathtaking. It's beautiful. And I was invited to score that with my good friend, Stephen Barber, who's also an incredible composer. And for me, working with Stephen is like going to school because he just comes from a very, very different approach to music in a way that I admire. And I'm so grateful I get the opportunity to work with him every once in a while. We co-scored that documentary and it was just a beautiful experience.
Yeah, I really would like to see that because it does sound fascinating. So
I recommend it. It's doing the festival circuit right now, but I believe it just got picked up for distribution, so it should be hitting the wider market soon.
Yeah, I will definitely keep an eye out for that. What would you say is the most interesting experience you've had working on various projects throughout your career?
You know, honestly, I really think it's Seis Manos. I really feel like I grew as a composer through the course of writing music for it. It certainly expanded my musical horizons and my palette. I learned a lot of styles of music that I hadn't had the opportunity to work on before, and just the experience of combining all these different backgrounds and elements and styles was just fascinating, and it really opened up a lot of ideas for me for future projects.
Musically it sounds fascinating from my point of view.
I do want to say, you know, even though there's a lot of, you know, violence and kung fu and all of that you would expect from a grindhouse type of show, there's really a lot of emotional, heartfelt and tender moments that are not necessarily seen in the trailers or in the footage that's out there. But, you know, the story itself is a very heartwarming and heart driven adventure. And I think it's a very engaging story because of that. It's not just, violence for violence sake.
Yeah, I will be checking it out when it comes out on Netflix. It's something that looks really fun and interesting and different. So, yes,
will be something really I'll look for.
So, last couple of questions for you. The first question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I'm watching Mindhunter at the moment.
I got just finished that
season.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Don't tell me about it. I won't.
It's brilliant, though. The second season's a good continuation from the first, basically.
Oh, yes, right. Yes. I think I'm into the third episode right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always find great music in TV right now, especially in the way that we consume TV these days with Netflix and Hulu. And speaking of Hulu, I'm watching The Handmaid's Tale, was also so engaging and such great music in that.
Yes, fantastic show.
Those are two that come to mind immediately. Because I literally just watched Mindhunter 2 nights ago and The Handmaid's Tale 3 nights ago. So
yeah, great choices.
Yeah, thank you.
And if
the Umbrella Academy. The Umbrella Academy was fantastic.
Yes.
I saw it when it came out, you know, 2-3 months ago. I love that show. That was so good.
Last question. If you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Oh, that's not a fair question. Now I got to think about it. Oh, you know what? Chernobyl. That would have been such a wonderful opportunity to work. And the score to that, I was on the edge of my seat every moment I was watching it. Yeah. I can't place the name of the lady that scored it, but she did a fantastic job. I was so enthralled, of course, with the story, but the music made such a big impact on the way that you perceive the experience.
Yeah, it is a phenomenal, phenomenal show that I thoroughly enjoyed that and just amazing. Yes, another good choice, I think, definitely.
Well, thank you. I'm sure I'll think of 100 others when we hang up, but I'll stand by these.
Yes, definitely. All right. Well, thank you for spending a little bit of time to chat through your work. I'm very much looking forward to the series when it comes out, and it'll be on Netflix fairly soon by the time this interview goes out. So we're definitely looking forward to that. And come back on when you've got your next thing up and running.
Thank you so much, Dave. I appreciate it. Enjoy chatting with you.
Lovely talking to you. Bye. So that was the interview with Carl Thiel about the show Ses Manos, which comes out on Netflix on the 3rd of October. If you want to go and find it, it is up there. You can add it to your favorites list. Now we have some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week, we have City on a Hill, which starts on the 18th of September at 9 p.m. on Sky Atlantic. This stars Kevin Bacon as a corrupt but venerated FBI veteran who reluctantly teams up with an African-American DA. Together, their unlikely alliance subverts the entire criminal justice system of Boston. So it looks kind of interesting, that. Mm. And Kevin Bacon's always worth watching as far as I'm concerned, so that's one to watch out for. That's on Sky Atlantic from the 18th of September at 9 p.m. Mr. Mercedes is back for its third season on StarzPlay. That's on the 19th of September. That arrives. StarzPlay is the Amazon add-on channel if you want to go and watch that. American Horror Story returns with 1984. This is the 9th season. That's on the 19th of September at 10 p.m. This is the one that is based around the kind of 80s slasher movies. So I don't massively do American horror stuff because it all gets a bit weird, but I quite like the idea of them doing like classic 80s slasher movie. That kind of could be quite good fun, so I might go watch that.
Very in right now with your It's and your Stranger Things.
Very, very much so. So one to go and watch out for. That is of course on Fox. Disenchantment is back for the second half of season one. That is on the 20th of September. That's the adult animated comedy series from Matt Goering. That's on Netflix. Criminal, which is this interesting new procedure coming to Netflix on the 20th of September. It's 12 unique stories set in 4 different countries. So they're sort of equally split between France, Spain, Germany, and the UK, each in their own individual language. So there are 3 episodes in each. So 3 in English, 3 in French, 3 in Spanish, 3 in German. The English ones stars David Tennant in one of them as well. So it looks kind of interesting. We posted some trailers for that. One worth going to watch, but that's called Criminal. That's on Netflix on the 20th of September. And My Life is Murder, coming to Alibi on the 24th of September at 9 p.m. This is a show starring Lucy Lawless, Xena Warrior Princess, as a fearless private investigator who solves the most baffling crimes as well as the coping with the frustrations of everyday life. So it's a Alibi procedurally type thing. I think it's Australia or New Zealand. I can't remember which. Sorry, Australian, New Zealand people. I know you'd hate getting that mixed up, but I can't remember which one it's from. But yes, called My Life is Murder, that coming to Alibi on the 24th of September at 9 p.m. So that is everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to mention.
No, that's it. I gotta go binge watch this video game TV show. What was it called?
It's called Games Master, the original
Games
one.
Master. I gotta go.
Yeah, there'll be clips on YouTube, I'm fairly sure.
It's the 90s, so you'll be playing like Pong, right? That's the 90s.
Slightly more advanced than Pong, but yes. So, yeah, we're very interested to go. I haven't looked at clips in ages. I shall have to go and have a look, see what I like.
Yeah.
So that is everything for this week. If you want to find more information on us, on TV shows, anything like that, you can go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week, find all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.